Yeah, I think there are many and varied reasons why people think of a village. In lots of ways, villages recreate what the suburbs were like in the, say, in the 60s, which is when I grew up, in the 60s. And the suburbs were safe places with communities and people were pretty engaged with their communities. Unfortunately, that's not true of now, I don't believe. Maybe in some suburbs, but clearly the world's moved on. In most families, husbands and wives work, and the suburbs are different places. So the village Lennon and the village Baxter and other villages I've visited, in lots of ways, recreate what our residents used to enjoy when their children were growing up. And as I say, that's an engaged community.
So a close-knit community.
Yeah, close-knit community.
People knowing what's going on and who's next door and...
Yeah, correct. And socialisation opportunities. I recall when I first started at the village way back in 1993, one of the first things I saw which really impressed me was one of our residents was rushed to hospital and mm-hmm. she came home some days later and on her front porch was a casserole.
Oh, how lovely.
and that's, you know, in a simplistic way, that's what I'm talking about, is how people are there.
They're looking out for each
other. They're looking out for each other. And what villages offer is clearly staff to help people live their lives to the fullest, including nurses on call and all those sort of things. But there's two levels of care in a village. One, the first level of care is clearly what the staff provide and the residents pay for that in their monthly charge. But there's another level of care which is provided resident to resident, and that's what the general public don't see. It's what we see, Stuart, isn't it? We see that
all the time.
Vicky,
hi, Brady.
Hi, Stuart.
It is about companionship and just that whole sense of community belonging, which unfortunately has gone out of a broader society. And I think that's one of the great features about retirement villages, like-minded people who want to, you know, grow gracefully or disgracefully together, as the case may be, and have fun and enjoy their senior years. Mm. I think that's one of our real features.
But every village would have that.
Absolutely, as a function.
So in your marketing space, what are your unique offerings? If I go and see both of you, am I going to come away saying, I could go to both? Or am I going to say, I would rather go to one or the other?
The vast majority of villages are good, well-run villages that provide companionship, friendship, a range of activities. It simply depends on what's going to suit your particular lifestyle. I mean, both Village Glen and Village Baxter are larger communities. You'd have 800 people.
Yeah, 760, 760.
And we've got 650 people living on site.
So they're rather large communities within the community as well.
Mm. Effectively a small suburb in its own right. And by our size, we can provide a broader range of activities and broader amenities than a smaller village can. But it's simply horses for courses.
So what would some of the amenities be at the village?
We each have full-size bowling green. Peter's got a golf course.
We've got a bowling green which is have a pennant bowls team. So you can play competition bowls for the Village Glen against other teams.
Other teams come and play.
Absolutely,
and
and we've got a golf course, which is a bit unusual. We're lucky to have the land to do that.
But it is very impressive.
Is it nine holes?
Nine-hole par three.
Fantastic.
And it's not a pitch and putt. It's a serious little golf course designed by Wolveridge Thompson. So well-designed little golf course.
Fantastic.
And I suppose that to Chaz's credit, the owner of the village, he wanted to put that in the village. He could have built units there, chose not to. Put a golf course for the residents, which was a great initiative, I thought. Mm-hmm. Swimming pools, gymnasiums, libraries, all the things you'd find in the general community you'd find in a village. And in essence, the villages run their own affairs. The village residents run their own affairs. We as management don't run those facilities.
So
they run like clubs.
Individuals can run the tennis, or run the golf, etc. Okay.
You know, think of an activity and it would occur in a village, but they run run their own shops.
Mm. Their own shops.
There we have shops on site.
How does that work?
It's like a milk bar.
It's like effectively like the corner milk bar.
And they run it?
Yes. The
residents run it. They have a local arrangement with the supermarket.
Yep.
The supermarket looks after the residents. They deliver in bulk to us and we just act as a reseller.
And then the resident can just go down and purchase bread, milk, that sort of thing.
It's a typical corner shop.
Yep. Oh, how fantastic.
You know, good old-fashioned corner shops.
Staffed by volunteers who are residents. And the profit that generates, the residents get to run their activities.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Have you noticed any getting slightly overweight?
Well, I know I am.
Yeah, look, just breathe in at this moment. thank you, Brady.
Looking after the shop. Stop my wife.
But it's a very self-sustainable model then as well, isn't it? You know, you've got that community sense.
And it shouldn't be taken that, you know, you need to shop in the village. I mean, we each provide a village buster to pick up the local public transport. So in our case, we go down to Frankston and Coringle Hub to pick up the shopping centres. So people have the opportunity to go out and about. Your own bus
your village can take you to the shopping centres, etc. Yeah. So you can do your large scale shopping.
Or if you just need, you run out of bread, you just need to go down to the corner store. It's within the village.
In our case, the local community bus, which is now public transport, comes through the village every hour from 8 till 5, 6 days a week.
Wow.
So we don't have a bus because public transport actually comes through the village.
Yeah. And we'd kill for that.
I'll bet. That's a big selling point,
yes.
Isn't it?
It is. It's a wonderful, and it's a gold coin to Rosebud, so it's a dollar.
Wow. It reduces that need for a vehicle as well.
Absolutely, yeah. So, look, we have a saying at the village, Glenn. We're talking about community and what is a village. We say, really, we are just another street in another suburb with wonderful services.
Do you have a pub?
No.
Oh, well, there you go. Can you buy a
tipple at the local shop?
You certainly can in the village Baxter, yes.
Oh, really?
You can.
Oh, so your little village shop is licensed?
We have a license now. We're promoting our cafe now for residents to come in and drop in, and it is licensed.
Well, that's always lovely if they've got family or friends popping in and can take them there to the cafe as well
And I've eaten in Stuart's Cafe, and it's just great. It's lovely.
Are the residents the sort of social architects themselves?
We would always say people can be as isolated as they would choose to be if you want to lock yourself up away from the broader world, or you can be as outgoing and engaged as you would like to be. There is something for everybody in each of our communities, and that's the strength of them. That whilst it's congregate living, you still have your own independence, but you have a support network around you that can look after you when you need it.
Mm. Do you both have meals service as well?
We do.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So
we have two restaurants, a restaurant and a cafe on site, and the restaurant's 7 days a week, 10 till 4, and the cafe's 7 days a week, and the restaurant's Wednesdays and Thursday nights, which, as does Stuart, it's bring your own grog and have a night out. So it's a la carte restaurant.
Right.
And we have probably 100 guests each occasion a night.
That's a lovely social gathering.
But you don't have a, for want of a better description, Meals on Wheels service.
We deliver meals to people's homes.
Oh, you do? Okay.
We have a community care arm, and we take meals within the village and also outside the village.
Okay.
Mm. And we've done that for a long time.
And likewise at the village,
Okay. Mm. So if I just can't be bothered to cook anymore, I can eat.
Yes. Okay. Meals will be delivered to you. Nice. Or we would still promote the aspect of socialisation. Particularly, what we find with our meal service is, particularly if you are a single person, you're unlikely to cook a roast meal now. Well, we can provide a roast meal to you any day of the week. So come out, have the socialisation, and have the meals that you're used to. Because a single person is not going to sit there, cook a roast for one.
No, that's true.
So you're offering that opportunity for them to...
To be able to socialise, as you said, have a good meal, keep their health up as well.
And talking about community, Brody, I mean, one of the things that just happened, our residents have formed what they call the Friendship Club. Mm-hmm. Now, the Friendship Club are single people who've lost their partner and looking to engage with other people in that sort of environment, so they go to the restaurant as a group. So if you went to dinner on your own, the Friendship Club will ask you to join them.
Right. Oh, that's lovely. Mm.
So it's not a dating agency?
No. It could be. We have had weddings in the village, my God.
Have you? Have you really?
Absolutely. It's been quite a number.
Romance has blossomed.
Absolutely, yes.
Well, that's lovely.
Terrific. All right, guys, lovely to see you.
And I'll see you next week.
See you next week, Stuart.
Thanks, Vicky. Thanks, Brady.
Thank you. Bye.
And welcome back to The Aged Age. This is Brady Guzet with the delicious Eddie. Incredibly intellectual Vicky Bupp.
Well, that's a lovely introduction.
Managing events for us. And we have a third member in the studio with us today, none other than Damien Fleming. Damien, he is a well-known person to our listeners, often talks on matters of great import, and he is our specialist to all to do matters health. Welcome to sitting on the other side, because you're often sitting where I'm sitting.
I normally are, but no, thank you for letting me to join in on this lovely aged environment.
It is a great environment, and it's a very complex one. Of course, it's time when all sorts of things start to go wrong. We start to rot on the vine, which is all very, very sad. What are the big things that start to fall over, the major ones?
Well, look, we're all living a little bit longer and longer than ever before at the end of the day. And as a result, you know, things start to ferment a little bit further on the vine, as you said. So,
what a wonderful analogy.
just to tie in with you there, Brody. I mean, look, literally, I think our listeners would all be very familiar with it. But at a younger age, these things are all starting to affect more people more often earlier. So we're talking arthritis, we're talking heart disease, we're talking cancers, respiratory problems, let alone osteoporosis and all the other allied health with the diabetes, falls risks, even substance abuse, and mental health issues of depression and anxieties.
Well, when you lose a partner, of course, all that sort of stuff cuts in. And there's, of course, quite a lot of divorce at our age too, isn't there?
Well, it is, sadly. It's people get to that, you know, lovely 60, 70 degree age group and they start thinking, well, I've got better choices out there. But splitting your assets financially can be quite devastating.
Yeah.
Let alone all the other medical complications, as you say.
When you should have started doing your prostate years before this. You know, it's 50, isn't it, when you're supposed to...
Well, look, I say even earlier. I mean, at the age of 40, people should starting to get a PSA and having a good relationship with their GP. I mean, people often think about...
Under the circumstances.
I was about to say.
A good relationship is very handy in that situation in particular.
We won't go there.
Well, you should go there. I mean, the reality is people need to get checked up regularly. And if you're not keeping a good check of your body from an early age, well, how do you expect to do it at an older age? We can all try and catch up with it, but once the horse is bolted, it's very hard to catch up.
There's all that bravado thing, you know, won't happen to me, isn't it?
Well, that's why the government at the age of 50 sends you a little white cup with a brown lid to check for bowel cancer. And if you haven't already done it, please go ahead and do
so. I thought
it
was an eye wash.
Look, unfortunately, it's bowel cancer is quite aggressive and without early detection. And the whole reason for those little samples is to find small traces of blood in your bowel excrement.
Right.
And without finding that early, people can actually die from bowel cancer rather early.
It's a quick onset, is it?
It's very aggressive and undetected otherwise.
It's a cheery
And is
thing,
it primarily through diet but also exercise? You know, we're told that sitting is the new smoking, so to speak, and being sedentary. So I imagine just keeping moving, no matter what your age is, so to speak.
Well, this leads to the basic principles of healthcare these days. It's about maintaining your activity to the best of your ability at all purpose and time, whether it be your memory function for your brain, all these brain testing actions that are being put out as applications. When you talk about cancers, I mean, sadly, we've got some of the highest rates. Now, we still don't know an absolute cause for that. We tend to say it's a lack of fibre in people's diets, but it's also the Western diets we have, high sugar, high fat, high salt.
I reckon it's sugar too.
And look, I have it come from a particular interest in heart disease, and we know for a clinical fact that if you have high fat and high sugar and high salt in your diet, you are going to have heart disease. And it's why it's the number one leading killer for people over the age of 60 in our country, second to cancers and all cancers. So people really need to start taking care of their body. And I like to use the analogy that if you had one car in your life, you'd look after it. But you only ever have one body. So you really do need to pay attention and get it checked up regularly, get it looked after. And look after yourself.
So should you be visiting your GP from the age of 40 or so annually for a checkup, other than, you know, if you have an issue that you feel that you need to visit, etc.?
Of course. Look, we recommend at least twice a year. I mean,
twice a year.
You don't get to know partners and friends without meeting them on a regular basis. And sometimes it's just a checkup. So we say every 6 months to go and see your GP for that checkup. Sometimes it might be a blood test. Sometimes it might be about ailments. But particularly the mental health issues that we have, we've got the highest rate. I think 25% of the population have some sort of anxiety or depression. And without understanding what a basic normality is for you, then it's hard for your GP to really get a handle on what's appropriate. And I say partnering with them in your ongoing healthcare, it's using them like a resource. People use plumbers to fix their house, and why not use your GP to fix your health?
Yes, of course. And we often go to the dentist twice a year. We'll get our little letter about you need a scrape and polish or whatever they want to call it. But at that time, we should be heading off to the GP for a bit of a checkup as well.
Well, it allows you to have those conversations on a more regular basis, even if it's just twice a year. You book your car in for a service, why not book your body in for one too?
And when we're talking about mental health, Damien, there's some issues there that we can prevent some of those problems occurring. You were mentioning apps, like there's, you know, all these brain teaser apps, etc. out. You highly recommend utilizing some of those, or?
Oh, I love using them. And there's a lot of free ones. There's a lot of paid ones out there. But the general reality is, if you're doing things that you haven't done before, it stimulates your gray matter. And right. by keeping active, as you said, physically and mentally, you're allowing your body to adapt to new scenarios more often. And we find that that creates better neural pathways and enables them to be active for longer. So the more flexible you are physically and the more flexible you are mentally, I guess that enables you to be a bit more resilient in the greater world. And I'm sure it's the most experienced people in the community will tell us, the more you've seen, the easier it is to cope with.
Have a, track. Have a pet. I think you need to have a dog. Well, they keep dying after, you know, after 12 years, or they stop walking at least. So, you know, then you know, it gets a bit depressing. But
well, as you get older, you tend to get a lot of friends that die and they start to move on. So maybe pets is a good way of preparing for that in the future.
Yes, it's but sad. You can't get a friend to come up and sit on your lap, can you really?
Well, you can fetch your money, right? Maybe you can.
There either. The skeletal issues, what happens, the skeleton starts to break down. The trouble is that there's this thing about anti-dairy, you mustn't have whole milk and you mustn't have cheese and you mustn't have all the other bits and pieces, but that's the stuff that gives you the calcium which keeps your bones good, isn't it?
Well, look, it does, but you've also got to absorb it in the correct way. So if you don't have adequate amounts of vitamin D, and we're finding a lot of research about the skin cancer campaigns with the slip, slop, slap, we've done very well in covering up, but unfortunately you do need a small amount of vitamin D
through the sun. Because you need the sun to process.
It helps break it down, yeah. helps your body absorb it, and it helps it get deposited in your bones in the correct manner. But I guess the issue is you also need resistance. And if people aren't active in their care and active in their day-to-day, and that's why the Aging Well programs at a lot of gyms, a lot of retirement villages are extremely good about getting people to use low-resistant weights, whether it be rubber bands, maybe even the odd small dumbbell, and getting people active moving in their lifestyle actually helps build that resilience for osteoporosis.
And that's bone and muscular.
Bone and muscle, yeah. Yes. You've got to use it.
Well, use it or lose it.
That is the theory, yeah. The old life be in it activity. Get off the couch and start being active.
It's easier said than done, though. I know, and I'm as bad as it. My beloved, she's always walking and straining. She's terrific. She really is. But I find it so boring. I find exercise really, really boring.
Well, I guess it's not just exercise, though, is it, Brody? It's about becoming active in your day-to-day life and incorporating some regular activity.
Well, that's why I listen to audiobooks, so I can walk and listen and, you know, it does something. But just walking, just looking at this. And people want to talk to you. They go, hello, good morning, how are you?
Oh, that's me, Brody. I'm always saying hello on my walks.
Yeah, that'd be right. Well, that's why I don't
Well, if I see you, I won't say hello.
Well, Damien, it's been fantastic to have you in here, buddy. We hope we can get you in every other week or so.
Every couple of weeks I'll be able to drop in, and we might do some specific stuff with regards to some of those diseases we talked about with dementia and Alzheimer's, some osteoporosis and some oral health issues.
Brilliant.
And we'll be able to continue this conversation every fortnight.
Welcome back to the Age Stage. And appropriate song there, Brody, because we have Tricia Hill here from Life Solutions. And thanks for coming back, Tricia.
Hi,
thanks for having me.
Good to see you.
Great to be here.
And so Tricia was going to chat to us today a little bit about the difference between an accountant and a financial advisor.
Yes.
The big confusion.
Because we often put them all together, but they're not one and the same.
Well, we do. We make the assumption that at least an accountant can also be a financial advisor, not necessarily the other way around, but we tend to assume that an accountant can be a financial advisor.
And that's true. There are some that are both,
yep.
But they play very different roles.
Yes,
exactly.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about the difference in if I was looking for an accountant, why would I be going to them versus the financial planner?
An accountant is someone who you go to look for, if you think about, help with your taxes. And how to minimize the taxes. So we look at sort of our life, and we have these different buckets of funds that we have. And so you think about maybe that the leaky bucket is the taxes. So
right.
the accountant helps you minimize that leak.
Right.
And
right.
we're financial planners, we help you fill the bucket.
Right.
So
we want financial planners to fill
that
the bucket.
That's sort of the difference between an accountant. And an accountant looks backwards and looks at the year that was and what kind of taxes do we have and what can we put in place and what can we use to minimize the leak. And that's very different from a financial planner who people think they don't need a financial planner until they actually have some money. But that's really the opposite, because our job is to help you grow and sustain your wealth and then later in life distribute it. So we help you actually fill the buckets. That's our role.
Until you kick the bucket.
Until you kick the bucket. But then we make sure that the when the bucket falls, it goes to the people you want to fill that bucket. We make sure with your lawyer that you get the bucket, the tipping is done right. That's exactly it.
So accountants tend to look back, whereas at any stage in life, then you could look to a financial planner, especially looking towards retirement, but never too early to start filling your bucket.
Never too early to start looking at those different buckets. You've got your, when you're starting out and you want to buy a house and how to actually do that. Secondly, you've got that bucket of the things that you want to fund, your lifestyle. So we look there. And while you're funding your lifestyle and you're in your growth phase, you also have that superannuation bucket that people tend to forget about. And that's your future. That's your retirement. So we help you look at that while your employer or yourself is filling that. How can we actually do the best to fill that bucket? And that's really the difference between a financial planner and an accountant, because we look at how you actually can grow that wealth.
For a small business, this part of the cost of living is often so very hard to meet, isn't it? If you have to put away that money each week into your super,
you've got to be disciplined.
Well, often you don't have it.
Yeah, that's it. And you got to, and that's though where I guess an accountant would come in and say, look, these are the things we actually have to look at, your taxes and putting away super, and what can you do to make sure in that business that you've got, you're doing the very best. And so they would look at that to help you structure that. And then we actually look at what do you do with that money once you have it.
Once you put it away or once you're saving it.
And one of the other differences between an accountant and a financial planner is licensing. And a financial planner is actually licensed for products. So telling you what and helping you, should you go into shares or should you go into managed funds? Should you buy property? Things like that. What should you do? What should you do with your superannuation money?
Do they have to declare any interest that they may have in anything that they offer you? So, on a commission basis?
No.
Okay.
So that's all been struck out. So right. It's actually just looking at what, like for a financial planner, they their charge would be based on, it could be an hourly rate or a fee for service. Right. This is what we're doing for you and this is what we'll charge.
Right. Okay. So you don't get kickbacks anymore?
No. That's gone.
Okay. Yeah. Good. Well, that's important because, I've had some financial advice which was very, very poor.
Mm.
And I know it was due to, he was getting huge benefits out of it.
Yeah.
And that was in the early days.
And that's why it's all been changed.
Yeah, it's good.
And there's probably a little bit of a hangover from that people aren't aware now that you don't. And it is sort of this unbiased, objective assistance or advice as well.
Mm. Exactly. And I think for the age stage, for those people that are in retirement and looking towards what they need, it's looking about how do we then structure what we've got to meet the needs. And it's lifestyle choices. And sometimes it's looking at, people living in a property and they decide to downsize because they're asset rich and cash poor. How do we change the buckets?
Right.
That kind of thing. Moving into retirement villages, moving into aged care, restructuring the buckets that you've got.
And making sure that you've got something to continue with that lifestyle, whether you end up in a retirement village
exactly.
or you then end up in aged care or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
There's a number of people that have websites that say, we can find your lost super.
Yep.
Are they scams?
I don't know about that. I don't know if they're scams, but I know that you can actually, part of the government website, if you've got your TFN and your birth date, you can go there and they can tell you whether or not there's some superannuation that's out there that you may have had when you had a job and you had a default super like Host Plus or something like that. You might have a little bit left in there if you've paid money in.
But and then, of course, we've always got that problem that you work for a company that hasn't been paying your super, and that's bad news too.
That's bad news.
Yeah.
That's really bad news. And that's where, it's very important to make sure that you are getting that. And
do you have rights as an employee to say?
You do.
Right.
You do. It needs to be paid and it needs to be paid quarterly. So right. if it's gone above a couple quarters, you have the right to question that.
And can you do anything about it?
You can. You can actually, I'm not exactly sure where you need to go, but you can go and make sure that you're getting paid.
Right. Okay. Well, that's opened up the at least the foundation to say you're it's not as bad as it was. No, it's now on a much stronger footing, isn't it?
Yeah, yes, of course. Yeah. But also it opens up that we do need to plan. We need to think ahead. I know we're always saying, you know, live for today and live in the moment. But if we do too much of that, then we may not be prepared for tomorrow and the next day.
Where can they find you? Where can we find your professional services?
So we're just here in Mornington.
Yep.
And we're at 22A Millgate Drive, just off Tyab Road, yep. Life Solutions. And we're happy to talk to anybody about how we can actually protect
those buckets. Do they need to make an appointment?
Yeah, they can give us a call and make an appointment. Yeah.
Okay, lovely. Well, there you go. We now know where you can go and get some very professional advice.
Welcome, Kim and Tom.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming along. Now, Kim, you've stepped in for Stuart this week. Who
I have, yes. Stuart's busy today, so he sent me along.
Oh, well, it's nice to have you on board. Always nice to have another female in the studio.
Will you be here next week?
It is impressive,
as well?
Isn't it?
I can be.
Oh, good. There you go.
Is that right?
It's impressive.
It's very impressive to have two women in the studio. It's a majority, I think, Brody.
It's good. It's good for a change. Now, we wanted to talk a little bit about retirement villages and aged care and nursing homes. Like, they're terms that we sort of throw together in one big lump, and we're hoping that you can clarify for our listeners and us a little bit about the differences. So if we're looking at retirement village, what do they provide versus if I was looking at a nursing home or something like that?
Well, Kim's the expert, but look, it is important to make a note. A lot of people have a preconception or a conception out there that a retirement village, for example, is an aged care village, and it absolutely isn't.
They're not connected at all.
They're not connected at all, and they provide a totally different set of services.
So they don't have, you know, one section is this and one section is that. They are very separate entities usually. Yes,
they absolutely can be the same operator like we have at the village. We have aged care on site as well as retirement village, but they are completely separately run. The retirement village side is state regulated, and retirement villages differ in each state for the regulations. The aged care side, which is what people used to call nursing homes, is federally regulated, very highly regulated. The license as to who can operate those is controlled by the government. Who can enter as residents is controlled by the government. Everything around a nursing home, there's very tight rules and regulations, whereas retirement villages, it's state run. It's a more lifestyle choice. And they are quite different, even though the same operator can have both on the same piece of land.
Okay.
Yeah, for example, our villages, we don't embrace and engage an aged care facility. We certainly coordinate with the community care and the external services that come into the village, because that's pretty practical.
But you would have some sort of relationship with aged care, because they would turn to you and say, "Mum's really unwell, what do we do now?" wouldn't they?
Brody, you're dead right. We do have relationships. But as Kim's pointed out, you know, the regulation and the way in which aged care are run and the way beds are allocated, you can't actually guarantee that you've got a bed for a person. And I think I shared a couple of weeks ago, 50% of the people that would be in my village that would have to go to an aged care facility, which is very few, they often have to relocate to where the children are. So it's actually way outside of our district, particularly in regional Victoria. So,
because yours is about lifestyle choice, and then when it comes to healthcare, it's more about being close to family. Is that the paradigm?
Correct. Yeah, the paradigm. Mm. And regional Victoria is a lot different from city living as well. Mm. Kim's really cool on this, on the aged care thing, so we need to talk about that, because I think people need to understand the difference between the regulation, and people need to understand the difference between the finance arrangements as well.
Okay.
Yeah, because the finances are very different, aren't they?
They are very different. To move into an aged care home, a nursing home, you need two pieces of paper. One is a healthcare assessment that you get from an ACAT team, aged care assessment team. They'll come do an assessment and work out, do you actually need the level of healthcare that's provided in a nursing home? And if the answer's yes, that gives you part of the ticket to go. But the other half of the equation is a financial assessment, where you have to go and have a combined income and assets test by Centrelink or Department of Veterans Affairs that determines how much aged care is going to cost you.
Mm. And once determines how much myself as an individual is going to pay versus subsidy, or is that what you're implying?
In aged care, there's actually four fees that people pay. The first fee is called a basic daily fee that every single person in an aged care home pays regardless of whether they've got just a pension and nothing else or whether they're a multi-millionaire. Everyone pays the basic daily care fee, which is set at 85% of the pension.
Right.
Then on top of that, there's what's called a means-tested care fee, which is an assessment based on your income and assets as to whether you can pay any of the healthcare costs yourself. And if the department determines that you can pay $50 of the healthcare costs a day yourself, the subsidy that the facility would otherwise receive from the government is reduced by $50.
So and you yourself have to pay.
And you yourself have to pay that. There's a third fee called an extra services fee that not all homes have, but some do. And that's to cover things like Foxtel and hairdressing and special meals and those sorts of things that are above and beyond the ordinary level of service. Some homes package them up and have it as an extra service fee. And then the fourth payment is the big one that everyone wants to know about, and that's the accommodation payment. And that's what we used to call a bond.
Okay.
But these days it's called a RAD or a DAP or a RAC or a DAC.
I've noticed there are quite a few acronyms.
Pretty radical around here.
Yes. It's got to be a New Zealand word.
Oh, come on. Definitely not. Only Australians can make acronyms like that.
And basically that the accommodation payment, you'll fall into one of three categories. If you're a pensioner and you have under about $46,000 in assets, the government's going to pay all of your accommodation costs.
Right.
If you're someone who is of low or modest means, so you've still got a pension and you've got about under $170,000 in assets, the government and yourself will make co-payments based on a sliding scale. And then if you fall into the category where the government determine you can pay all of your accommodation costs, that's where you're responsible for paying the RAD or the bond or whatever you'd like to call it. And even then, you don't have to pay it as a lump sum.
It can be a payment plan type thing.
You can do it as a lump sum. You can do it as an interest equivalent of what that lump sum would have accrued with a government mandated interest rate, or you can pay a combination of both.
Right.
So it is quite complicated, and this is one of the areas where financial advisors can really come into their own and really benefit people that are moving into aged care.
Is the home taken as an asset?
That's not a simple question anymore. It used to be no.
Right.
Now, if there's a protected person still in the home, for example, one spouse moves into care and the other one stays in the home, the home's protected. Or if there's a dependent child still in the home. But there's been a lot of changes to the Act in the last few years. So for someone where there's no one protected left in the home, it's only protected in certain circumstances if you're going to rent it out, and then there's time limits on that. And it is extremely complex, and the value of the home is actually capped. So again, it's something that a financial advisor really needs to sit down and talk to someone about. Mm. But the important thing about financial advice is you need to get that before you complete the income and assets assessment.
And your medical.
Medical, you can get organised through your local doctor.
Yes.
But the combined income and assets assessment, you really need financial advice before you send that to Centrelink. Because if you fill it out wrong and send it to Centrelink and they think you've got more assets than you do have, it can be very hard to actually undo
to
that.
To then retrospectively amend it.
And there are some things you can do to move your assets around, like prepaying a funeral or gifting, that can move you between those three categories I talked about, and that can make a big difference to the cost of care for you.
So to summarise that, two people in a retirement village, and that's an asset, they've paid for the building.
Yes.
One gets sick, one needs to have a medical assessment and a financial assessment, that's worked out, and there you go. It doesn't affect the missus that's been left until she's turned, become sick.
Yes.
So that level has continued to be protected. But what happens though, because you have rental, don't you?
Yes.
I would have been paying rent I've now got some money in the bank, which I use to pay the rent. Now, I go to the hospital thing, care, but my wife needs to be continued, her rent needs to be continued to be paid. Will they look at the asset and say, well, we've got to take a certain amount of that money and leave it for that purpose?
Yes. When they do the assets assessment, they will split assets 50-50 down the middle, regardless of whose name they are on paper. They're considered the combined assets of the couple, and that will be split down the middle. And the other thing that happens is when one partner moves into aged care, you go from a couple's pension down to single separated by illness pensions. So there is a slight increase in the overall amount.
Sure, but if I'd been paying $500 a week to stay at your place, I don't suddenly pay $250 a week because there's only one of you.
You so, still pay your full fees. And
but they would allow for that. They will account for that, manage to know that that money can still going to need to be paid for. Because working on that principle, I wouldn't rent because they would take potentially her money as well as my money.
The reality is, Brody, is that whether you're living in a rental village or a traditional retirement village or if you're living in the community renting a property, you're in the same boat.
Yes.
So I think what Kim's alerting you to is it's very important. Trish, I think, Hill last week really touched on this. Very, very important to have a financial assessment done so that you are aware and proactive about what your circumstance may be if you find yourself in a situation either because of a health need or an accident, what we call the Molly Meldrum syndrome.
Yes.
You know, so many people are unprepared and have not done the financial assessment that when a health issue does occur, they're getting released from hospital and supposed to go to respite or looking for a long-term place of residence in a home or whatever, they haven't had this ACAT assessment done.
So you can get that assessment done on your own volition at any time?
At any time. And
what age would you...
But you need to have it done where it's reflective of your care need.
Correct.
So if you're 70, healthy, driving, I wouldn't have one done because all the assessment's going to show is that you don't have a care need.
Right.
But if you're 80 and you've got osteoarthritis and you're struggling to sort of get around and someone has to drive you and you can't really shower anymore, someone has to come and help you do the cleaning, that's when you get an assessment done that shows that you've got these care needs growing,
right,
but you're not quite there yet, so it's not an urgent assessment, and then you can help to prepare and have a look at some homes and decide and have those conversations about, do I want to move closer to the kids or do I want to stay where I've lived for the last 50 years?
Right.
Absolutely. And often a person that's in a retirement village that enters a retirement village is not in that situation.
No.
They haven't got the
no.
health issues. Yeah. They haven't got the slowing down, the rigors, challenges of getting old. And then all of a sudden that does start to happen. If they're in a supportive environment, a good environment where the management is proactive, then that's when we encourage family to come in and start talking to mum or dad about the potential challenges and what they can do and how they can do it.
Right.
And if necessary, coordinate external care. And then if it does happen that they have to move into a fully fledged aged care facility, then we've been proactive to make sure mum or dad's been assessed properly.
So just on the basis that when somebody has been left on their own for whatever reason, there is a propensity they may be able to drive and all the rest of it, but they're just not feeding themselves and looking after themselves. Is that an opportunity to have an assessment done?
It is. There's lots of, not just nursing home options, but there's lots of other aged care options.
Right.
There's community care, veterans home support programs. Even if you've had a short stay in hospital, there's post-acute care programs that can all lead into aged care packages, which again help support you in your home until you actually need that 24-hour round-the-clock care that people in nursing homes or aged care homes need.
Right.
Mm. So all the information's out there, and there's expertise, village operators such as Stuart's Village and Kim, and our villages, we can direct people as required.
And is is that a good starting point? It's, you know, I wouldn't know where to start. Is it a good idea just to go to a local village?
Absolutely.
And sort of say, we're in this situation, this is where I'm at, can I speak to someone for assistance? And then...
Absolutely.
Take it from there.
The other place you can go is the government have created a website called myagecare.gov.au.
Right.
And that's a really good starting point for if you're looking at aged care options. It doesn't cover retirement living, but it covers
aged care.
So that's nursing home, in-home care at home, in the community care. It covers even simple things like if you need domestic support at home and you're older, and you could, there's little basic fee calculators on
there. Okay, and that the website again was?
myagecare.gov.au.
Okay, and you've used the term aged care and nursing home.
I use them interchangeably.
Are they the same?
Aged care is like an umbrella term that covers residential aged care, which is what we used to call nursing homes, as well as community-based aged care, which are care packages and other things that can come into your home.
And I'm the individual still living in my home, but services are coming services and visiting me on a daily basis or whatever's needed.
Will you run seminars at your own places from time to time for these?
Excellent question, Brodie. Most well-established retirement village aged care operators, they usually have what we call session 101s. You know, so that you can actually assess the living choice options that you actually have. And whilst we're discussing aged care and or retirement at the moment, there's three or four other categories like lifestyle, land lease arrangements and so on, which I'm sure we'll cover on this program as we go forward. Mm. But the key is again, if you're trying to be proactive, Kim's Village, Stu's Village Baxter, Peter Nelson's and our Encore Living group, we're always running regular sessions,
information where people sessions, come
in and explore the options they have, and the idea of exploring those options, at least they know where to go or there's a point of contact. We do try and connect them with professionals, particularly financial planners, to make sure that if there is an acute situation, that they've got a point of contact where they can sit down, do the financial assessments that need to be done, health assessments and so on, so that they can be looked after. You can imagine the trauma of having to deal with just the accident or something, let alone worrying about the money and what
comes
goes
next.
On,
yes, you know? Of course.
Well, I think this has been a really great session.
It's a ripper session. We've got Kim, that's why.
It's been good. Thank you.
We better get her.
She's impressive. She's impressive.
No. Impressive is the word of the day.
It is the word of the day.
An SME, subject matter expert.
That's right.
So thanks, guys, for being here today. We really appreciate it. Every week we appreciate your time here. As the story unfolds, it just gets better and better.